Title of my talk. I have no visual aids because the world I see is changing at such a rate, if I produced a slide, it would be out of date and wrong. And I thought about it, and what's today? What's happening today? 29th of June. iPhone. Everybody know about the iPhone? Who doesn't know about the iPhone? Dear, dear, the next big change. And I needed a starting point, and I had to relate it to my own experience. So I thought, what was I doing when I was six? I was reading The Wireless World, and I heard about this curious thing called a germanium crystal, and a cat's whisker, and a jam jar, and a coil of wire, and bingo, I could listen on the radio. So the title of my talk is From Cat's Whisker to iPhone. Now, obviously, your concerns and interests have been identified, and thank you, Graham, and Microsoft, and all the great people who have organized this event. Thank you to my ex-staff for ensuring that I could actually keep in touch with the big world while I've been staying at Pollock Hall. So everything worked beautifully. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Bill. Bill isn't here, is he? But he was on the job first thing yesterday morning. So in 24 hours, I felt that I'm perfectly at home, globally, and here. And we are enjoying our time. We, being Polly, put your hand up, Polly. Come on, stand up. You see, how do you keep a wife happy? Sorry?
I don't like audience participation.
That's right. But the first lesson you must learn is how to keep your wife happy for 50-odd years while we were having fun using these funny electrons in various ways. And there's always an answer. Polly is a crossword fiend. So the first thing I do in the morning in Australia, long before you lot are awake, is to download the Telegraph crossword and print it out and give it her with a tea in the morning. That's the beauty of being 9 hours ahead of you lot. So that's another lesson. How do you maintain relationships? Not personal, but general. So I've got a long span to consider in less than 20 minutes, 70 years. And I've tried to divide it by the people who matter. The things that matter are not the electrons. They're not the big companies. It's the people, the individuals. Some of them capable of working in teams, some of them not capable of working in teams. And it's these people who are important to us all. So I've subdivided the categories of people who I respect over the 70 years. First and foremost, the teachers. You lot, some of you. It was interesting when we set up the first private university in Australia, which was my last job, the first thing we defined in the 2 days we had to plan it, 2 days, was the primary role of academic staff is to teach. And the next thing is to make sure that they're teaching the truth, which means you've got to relieve them from teaching at regular intervals to actually find out what they've been teaching wrong. And the pattern we adopted in Bond University, everybody heard of Alan Bond? He's out of prison now. But his institution goes on. The university is producing interesting graduates. We are voted the best university in Australia in terms of the students' response post their education. And what was the formula? We ensured that staff who were recruited worked for 2/3 of the year. The other third was subject to the other staff in their faculty or school or whatever they call themselves, their set, were adding value to the whole discipline. So if they wanted to write a book, they wanted to go somewhere else, they wanted to swim, as long as the other staff agreed that what they were doing would make them better teachers. That was appropriate, and that's worked very well. The other thing, of course, is to make sure the holidays are minimum. And it's unnecessary, in our experience, to require 3 years to do what you can do in 2 if you minimize the holidays. And do the students like that if they're paying? And do the staff like it too, because they get new students more regularly. And new students the lifeblood, I think, of a good university. So the teachers are in my category. Next, the pioneers, the people who are changing things, whatever it is, politics, computing, you name it, it's the pioneers we need to relate to. The managers who make it happen in harmony with everybody. And then the mates, the people you require to give you continuity through this process. Teachers, I'll be brief. Two people made a fantastic difference to my personal education, and totally by arbitrary methods, not by any dictate of politicians, whether it's a grammar school or a secondary school. A war came about, and German Jews were being encouraged to come and teach in schools in South Wales. And I had a superb teacher of mathematics who taught me from the age of 11 until I left at 16 all the mathematics I've ever needed, because he went on to be a professor of mathematics as soon as the war was over. And he taught us as if we were intelligent beings, not as people who needed a textbook. Howard Fuchs, I don't know anybody met him, he was at Swansea eventually, was a brilliant mathematician. He taught me all the physics and mathematics I needed to get a first-class honours degree in Manchester. Seriously, what he laid down in fundamental learning procedure, was an incredible benefit to me and several others in our year. So Fuchs, top of the list, great. If you can get a good teacher at those formative years, what a difference it makes. Second one, how lucky can you be to leave a small mining town or steel town, Port Talbot, and go to this weird and wonderful place called Manchester. Now, Manchester at that time, the Victoria University of Manchester, or better still, Owens College. These institutions who owe themselves to a name, like Yale, well, Yale lent them a library, I think, he didn't do much more. But Owens was an engineer in Manchester, and he set up the Victoria University as part of the set of provincial universities in those times, with a purpose. And they attracted some interesting guys, and I went to take physics because I knew I couldn't learn any more maths. I didn't have the equipment, but I was interested in physics, and they had a rather interesting professor of physics in PMS Blackett. Anybody come across Blackett? Tony Brooker was taught by Blackett. Harry Whitfield was taught by Blackett in Imperial. He went on from Manchester to Imperial. Another fundamentalist who taught physics. He didn't teach optics or sound, and he ensured that our final exams after 3 years were on physics. You went into an exam room not knowing what the topic would be. And he taught first year students fundamental physics. And the way he did it, his approach, his overall statement that you cannot assume that the physics I teach today will be valid tomorrow. He debunked the whole question of the credibility of it's our best endeavors, but it's not necessarily the truth. And Blackett got that over. He also got a Nobel Prize. And he also, as Donald said yesterday, got a lot of prestige. And along with another few interesting characters, he brought the pioneers together. But he was fundamentally a teacher. So those two get top marks and made a great difference to my subsequent career. So it meant that when I was, what was it? 1948, 19, I was cast loose with a good initial education in a curious place called the Electrotechnology Department of the University of Manchester. Now, my good luck is in the third year of physics, you were allowed to actually walk down the corridor, walk down the laboratory tiles, and see what happened in the engineering department, though it was called electrotechnology. And there was a character at that time, 1948, remember, who'd recovered from his the great times, seriously, he'd had during the war as a wizard in electronic circuitry, looking for young people to do the work for him in using his gadgets. It wasn't a question of building computers. It was a question of using a cathode ray tube storage tube, which he worked out for other purposes and wanted to see have a commercial future. And I was lucky, and a few others of us. Di Edwards is still around, fortunately. And here he comes. And we had a ball learning from the first pioneer that I came across in the real world. That's Freddie Williams. That's halfway, so I'm going to have to speed up. Clear. 10 minutes left for the rest of the 70 years. I'm only at 1948. I'll be brief. All of this is on the internet, and as Donald says, if you've got the patience, and we have the patience to make Wikipedia better, and that's in our court, you can see all of this in a 6 months' time elsewhere. Anyway, FC attracted, because of the sponsorship of Max Neumann, who'd been at Bletchley, had been the wise man, a German Jew, or of German Jewish origin, not himself German, but born in this country, but again, a global thinker, brought together with FC, one of FC's preferred co-workers in the war, Tom Kilburn. And then, when Alan Turing arrived not by invitation of FC and Tom, no way. They were totally different animals, but by Max Neumann. To give mathematical legitimacy to what these guys down the corridor were playing at in their tool room. And, of course, Turing had a big influence in many ways. More influence on myself and Di Edwards, I suspect, than our professors. Because at that stage, we were prepared to listen to people like Alan. The others weren't. And the best example I can give of the benefits of having a person like Alan in the vicinity was when we were designing the Mercury order code structure, Di and I said, well, what's the simplest instruction set we need to bootstrap a complete operating system onto this hardware? And we're prepared to change the hardware. I think that'll come up later, hopefully, in this conference. Get the hardware to suit the software and work together. And we asked Alan, knowing that Tom and FC would produce an engineer solution, we said to Alan, what's the optimum order code that we need so we can bootstrap it successively? And we want the least number of instructions and the least complicated. And Alan went off, and this was, in our opinion, his greatest talent. He set the limits in so many areas. And the limit was one instruction, one bit in the right place. So Di and I had a very simple situation. We knew that if we could do that, we had the simplest way of bootstrapping all the rest of the instructions. And we did it, and the Mercury order structure was based on that. We had great times with Alan. We enjoyed his company in the country lanes. Everybody knows the story of his hay fever. He suffered from hay fever, and he suffered from a bike with one cog missing on the sprocket. And he enjoyed cycling. So what did he do? Put his gas mask on, and he counted the revolutions of the wheels. Is this serious? There was this character cycling around the Cheshire lanes, counting with a gas mask on. Great. He did it his way. His last few weeks, when Di and I probably saw more of him than many, we were building a magnetic, large magnet system for him. He had a theory of the effect of magnetic fields on the brain. He's been proved right later. It's now an established discipline. And everybody in the department thought, what is happening? Di and I just did what Alan wanted. He wanted us to build a big magnet, and we did it, and he used it with satisfaction. So pioneers like Alan, like FC, like Tom, all different, and working under the general envelope of Max Neumann. And then Tony Brooker came along as an antidote to Alan. Tony isn't here. Yeah. No. No. Great pity he could correct me. Where is he? Hello, Tony. Are you an antidote to Alan? Are you an antidote to Alan Turing?
I guess I wasn't.
That's right. It's been proved yesterday. Is Jack here? Tell us, Jack, what it is you brought to the party.
Well, I haven't actually got it here just now, but I got from Tony Gibbons, who used to work with, in fact, you may remember Tony Gibbons, because I understand he corresponded with you. He put Mercury autocode onto ICI's IBM machines, but he turned up with a typescript of Alan Turing's assembler language for the Mark I. Which he, for some reason, called the Mark II, because strictly it was the second one. And this simply, it was very easy to use. All you had to do was to remember how to encode the two sets of 32 different symbols you could get using the five tracks of the Cree teleprinter code, commit these to memory, and you could write all the instructions using this.
True, Tony? I never tried to program in that instruction set. Tony saved us from all of that. And of course, we've timed it well. Tony joined us late on in the exercise, but at a very critical time when we actually had to justify what it was we'd been doing. So pioneers in the Manchester set, I was lucky to be there for a few years. Then we went to the chemical industry with this new toy. I thought it was about time we actually found out if these things were going to do any good for the economy. And I decided, with FC's blessing, to move to a safe house in industry, to a central instrument laboratory. Safe because FC knew AJ Young, the guy who ran it, and he knew he would look after me because I was clueless in how to manage things. I had been engineering away with Freddie, and he didn't manage things. He knew how to get managers to do it for him, like Tom. Anyway, we worked in ICI, and Tony helped us out enormously there, of course. All the portable languages came along and came and talked to the people, and we decided that PL1 was going to be the successor of COBOL, didn't we, Tony? I think you told us that at the time. That's the example of a good, admit your mistakes and admit that you're always learning. Anyway, in ICI we had a great time, and one particular person I put in the pioneer category, I don't know how Tony shares my opinion, or anybody else who remembers the ICI period. This was when we were putting Mercury and KDF9 into the competition against the undelivered IBM 360. Anybody IBM here? We were lucky, they were late with that, so we managed to get away with a year or two longer than we would have done. And Jeremy Bray came along. Anybody heard of Jeremy Bray? Very interesting, very kind of capable mathematician who tried to tell the statisticians how to do statistics and then told the chemical engineers that they designed plant not to make ethylene but petrol, and is that what they really wanted? Jeremy took a fresh look at the work that was requiring heavy computation, whether statistics or chemical engineering, and threw away the textbook, did it on a powerful machine in a good programming language, so it was portable. He could tell the engineers how he'd done it. And in my opinion, the best work we ever did at that stage in ICI was to prove that everybody had been doing various calculations wrong. Now, you're not very popular with proving that, but undoubtedly it's very necessary, and I'm sure that benefited that arm of the chemical industry. So I put Jeremy high in the list. Now, we come to our, I don't know what words to use, Sid. Sid and Harry and Tony and Imperial College and the relay machine and all that stuff had been going on in my consciousness. And then Sid rang me up one day when we were being translated for political reasons or management reasons from our nice little bed in ICI Wilton Works, where all the engineers were, to back to Manchester, which we, Polly and I, had already been in. And Sid said, we got a job up in Edinburgh. And I better be careful. The first candidate, has his wife didn't want to come. Thank God. And I didn't ask Polly. So I didn't make that mistake. And I jumped at the opportunity for many, many reasons. A, largely because Sid said so. B, because Michael Swan said, we don't have to bother with the selection committee, we've done all that. And Kemmer and Ewart, Ewart. Where's his son?
Farvis.
New FC. And a new that. Those guys, if they said this chap has got a future, even if he isn't doing all that well now, he could benefit, even if the institution couldn't, and I certainly did. So the company of Sid, the people Sid attracted in and around him, and the support we got from the scientists who felt let out, this was stated by Donald very clearly. And in addition to the university and the students, Sydney had a primary concern with students, God bless him, But I had the problem of looking after the research institutes as well. That's it. Do you want me to stop? Sorry. You got the message. The pioneers are vital in all things. They were certainly in my time. I give 1 minute to each of the final categories. Managers, so important. Managers who made a lot of difference to me in chemistry, in the chemical industry, A.J. Young, he was a great con artist. He taught me how to con people into doing things his way. Dick Beeching, ruthless bastard, who made absolutely arbitrary decisions which were spot on, like user should pay. The best advice I ever got in management, when I went to see Dick Beeching, having been given the job of running a central computer for the big chemical company, charge the buggers. Give them half an hour free computer time. After that, if they don't justify the cost, real costs, you're wasting your time. Dick was a great model to me. And we did try to charge, and I think do still charge in some respects, don't we, in Edinburgh? You don't? Dear, dear. And then in Edinburgh terms, the man who made all the difference from a management point of view, Bob Seaton. Bob, the work he did, the way he did it, the reports he wrote, all those things were magic. Last, mates. Mates. I've got two mates left. Polly, after 50-odd years, after all this, started in ICI, and we go on and on about that. And the other one, some of you may remember, a guy called John Makepeace Bennett. Bennett, John Bennett, first professor of computer science. He's my SID substitute. He came through the wartime as a radar mechanic. He learned his trade. Tony will remember John Bennett, surely. At EDSA? Oh, yes, he's very much alive. And most importantly, so is his wife, Mary. Because Mary was in Ferranti, and John and Mary are my rocks in Sydney in these terms. In fact, I've known John and Mary longer than I've known Polly. And having those people associated with whom you can share experience has been so important. Finally, last words, you're never too old to learn, and you're never too old to admit when you've been wrong. Thank you for your time. Thank you.